If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
In Old Chicago, a family can still afford to be a family.
So have an Old Chicago day.
Yes, that's right, 720 WGN, and look who's here. Why, it's Corey Remore from the Chicago Tribune. Good evening, Corey.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Very good. Looking at the article about the amusement parks, the history of the amusement parks in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and we just played a little commercial there for Old Chicago. Were you around for any of these?
I'm trying to remember. I would hope neither of us were around for some of the ones from the 1800s.
Well, yes. Okay, like Captain Paul Boynton's water chute from 1894 to 1907. I wasn't trying to imply that you were around for that, but I mean, or the Forest Park one from 1908 to 1922. No. Or Kitty. Now, wait a minute. Here's one.
Mm-hmm.
Kitty Land?
Mm-hmm. Kitty yes. Land.
Yes.
Yes. All right. I had a birthday party at Kitty Land. I must have been like 7 or 8 years old. My parents have a t-shirt somewhere that said, I had my birthday at Kitty Land. It's like, I remember Kitty Land so well.
From 1950 to 2009.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at your article and the timelines on these amusement parks. Not very long, most of
yeah.
them.
It has to be really expensive. I mean, the upkeep has to be a lot. You have to have a lot of employees. I never got to visit Old Chicago. Yep. I mean, it sounded like it had all of the fixings for a great thing, an indoor amusement park, you know, that you could go to pretty much whenever. And there was shopping there as well and places you could eat. And for many people, it, even though it didn't last that long in Bolingbrook, it was a precursor to the Mall of America, which if I actually interned in Minneapolis at the newspaper
what?
One summer. Yeah.
No kidding. Wow.
Minneapolis in the summer is just a wonderful city. And on the weekends, yeah, I just go walk around the Mall of America. And at the time, it was a Peanuts themed amusement park. It was called Camp Snoopy. And so like the log ride was like Snoopy themed and Woodstock yeah. themed. And so this was, Old Chicago was really the precursor to that. So even
I didn't know that. I never
yeah,
heard that.
Yeah, even though the concept didn't last that long here, it went on to do pretty well in other places.
You know, you were talking about the cost of these things. From 1905 to 1933, you write about White City. And just some of the statistics, it had a German restaurant that seated 2,500 diners,
yeah.
a ballroom with 1,000 dancers. They did a reenactment of the Chicago Fire, as you write here, staged by 2,000 performers.
Yeah.
I mean, with real horse-drawn fire engines extinguishing the blaze set in model buildings. I mean, how in the world would you pull that off? 2,000 performers.
I mean, yeah,
whoa.
it's incredible. And if you go to the Chicago Tribune's website, you can see yeah. what White City looked like. And it was lit up at night and just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it's interesting how our definition of what we consider an amusement park has changed from
yeah.
what it used to be back then. Yeah, beer gardens were a big thing, as you mentioned. Places where people could go and just like take a boat ride
yeah.
on a canal, that type of thing. That was a big to-do. And part of me wonders, you know, if I were living in Chicago back then, in an apartment, assuming, would going to a place like this where I could just walk around and take in the sights, like maybe having that open space was a good thing and would kind of make you, you know, get away from your daily to-do. It's funny because my son and I were just talking about Disney World and Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you go to a place like that, you just kind of forget about everything else. You know, you're all in on it. So for people back then, it must have been similar to that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Disney World and Disneyland, and Disneyland's great. But Disney World really is a world. I mean, that's why they call it a world. I mean, they've got all these sections of the park devoted to different, you know, suddenly you're at the Eiffel Tower or something like that. I mean, you're really, you're not living your normal life, needless to say. And I think that's, I think you're right on with that, with these early amusement parks. I mean, when you've got 2,000 people participating in some sort of presentation, I mean, just think what that must have, the planning and the choreography and all of that must have been just unbelievable.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny because I always like to say, you know, this is what people did before social media. Like, yeah. This is what was the thing to do or to be at or to be part of.
You know, Larry Lujack was a very famous air personality here in Chicago. Unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago. I mean, he was really, really popular. But he did, what did he do a commercial for? Either Kittyland or Santa's Village. And he would say something like, "You're not here today? Oh, that's all right. You can come tomorrow." I mean, this was like a slogan. You know what I mean? And these were very low rent productions, but they were very popular. I mean, Kittyland and San.
Is it akin to Victory Auto Wreckers? The old commercial?
No, it's much more. What's the word I'm looking? Human. Then Victory Auto. There was no like giant eagle coming down and laying a 10-pound egg on the top of your car. And whatever that eagle says, I don't know. But I mean, you know, there's over the years, you know, there are certain commercials for certain things on television and jingles on the radio for certain products and businesses that become like iconic. And for instance, let's see, come on, John, pull one out.
I've got one for you.
I can think of a carpet company.
Yes.
Well, in fact,
go ahead,
David,
do it.
I think that's were you thinking the 773 one?
Uh-huh.
Yes, exactly. Oh my gosh, you read my mind, David. Same thing.
Let me tell you, it was an eye-opening moment when I turned up the TV because I saw a new commercial, and it wasn't my voice. That got my attention.
Yeah, you did those commercials for a while, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No kidding.
Which one? Can you say?
Yes. I don't think I need to.
Yeah,
that one.
There was.
I just got used to somebody telling me that I was iconic, and I'm like, "Oh, cool, I'm iconic." Then it's
what you said was iconic, or what you were, the script was. Oh, I'm drawing a blank on something. Well, hopefully it'll return to me. You know, these.
The guy before me was iconic, too.
Aww.
Yeah, because the how long did that ad? Is it still running? I haven't kept track. It must be.
But they're running with someone else now.
Oh, I mean, of course. But I mean.
So the commercials are still going.
Exactly.
They just. They toned it down a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot quieter.
Wonder what their reasoning for that was.
No clue. Didn't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So, life is full of surprises. So,
Lynn Burton. It's come to me. Lynn Burton.
He was the one before me.
No, Lynn, I believe, wasn't Lynn Burton the Burt Wyman TV Ford man? 35-35. Lynn Burton for certain.
Ah, okay.
35-35 North on Ashland. Yeah. And there was also Timmy, the long Chevrolet TV boy, who would scream.
It was Lynn Haldren.
Lynn Haldren. Okay.
He was the original Empire guy.
Right.
He was the first one.
Right. But the Burt Wyman guy was Lynn Burton for certain. I know it was Lynn Burton for certain because Burton and certain rhymed.
Yes.
And you can't forget something like that.
No. Uh-uh.
We've got Corey Rumor from the Tribune, and we'll do a lot more when we come back. But right now it's the bottom of the hour and time to get into the WGN newsroom.
Tomorrow, I love ya. Tomorrow, you're only a day away.
720 WGN with John Landecker at 836. Corey Rumor from the Chicago Tribune is with us. And so I'm looking at all the material that was sent to me today, Corey. And as you could probably imagine, this one page really caught my eye. It's got the WGN call letters on top of it in a logo that's no longer used. Then it says underneath it, the Chicago Tribune Station on the Drake Hotel at 416.4 M. That's got to be some sort of technical term. Then there's a dash to 720K, and 720 is where we are right now. And then underneath that, it says Little Orphan Annie. Mm-hmm. So tell us that. Well, I don't know if you're going to be able to tell us the whole story because it is. How do you write these things? I mean, this has got so much stuff in it. It's just unbelievable. I mean, I'd be going out of my mind if I had to put this together. Seriously. I mean, you're going back all the way to 1885 for crying out loud. Right?
I mean, this is the best part, though, of my job is the Chicago Tribune has been around since 1847. And, yeah. You know, we don't have the first editions, thanks to the Great Chicago Fire. They burned up. But anything kind of after the Great Chicago Fire, we have those pages digitized. And so I'm able to go back and see. And so whenever there's a Chicago connection with something, it allows me to go back and kind of see the progression. And one of those things is the evolution of Little Orphan Annie and how it started as a comic strip. And that comic strip ran in the Chicago Tribune Syndicate. So the very first Little Orphan Annie comic strip ran in the New York Daily News first as a test, and people there loved it. And so a few months later was picked up here in the Chicago Tribune. And not long after that, it debuted as a radio program. And it's interesting because Annie was initially a comic strip that was targeted toward adults. It was suspense. It was mystery. People waited, you know, day to day. It ran daily. And then on Sundays, it was a bigger comic strip. It took a bigger portion of the page up. And wow. So people wanted to follow along on these adventures. And the reasoning for why it was targeted toward adults initially, Harold Gray, who was the comic strip's creator, said, hey, little kids don't buy newspapers. Parents buy newspapers. Adults buy newspapers.
What do you know?
So, yeah, it became a thing where people would read it, you know, on the train to work.
Oh, sure.
And then they'd get to work and they'd be talking about it. So it wasn't really until the radio show started that it was more targeted toward children. And I just love the idea of, you know, I think of a Christmas story. And that was the fun part about putting this together. It's like, oh, that scene from A Christmas Story where Ralphie gets the decoder for Little Orphan Annie's radio program in the mail, and he wants to, you know, figure out what the code is and what Little Orphan Annie is telling him. And spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, but it just says drink more Ovaltine because Ovaltine was the initial sponsor for the radio show, especially when it was on WGN. So it's interesting how these things came together. And over time, it became more targeted toward kids and also merchandise. And it eventually became a Broadway
musical.
Yes. Which that all leads to my son and I were able to take a trip up to Canada to the Stratford Festival.
Sure.
And Annie was performed there this summer. So that's kind of where the idea came. Okay, well, how did we get to this point? And so, yeah, recently I retraced the history of it. It's pretty fascinating.
More than fascinating. People should get a hold of this and read it, because I'm looking at it today and listening to you now and looking at it again, and I'm going, this may be totally off the wall. There's a movie in here. I mean, yes. Like a movie that starts in, 1885.
Yes.
Hypothetically speaking, because you've got these various dates, February 12th, 1917, early 1924, August 5th, 1924, September 27th, 1924, 1924, big year.
Yeah, yeah.
1928. You know, and everybody knows. Well, not everybody, but a lot of us are familiar with a more recent history, as you mentioned. You know, I think a lot of us know that it was a cartoon and or comic strip, rather, and I think it still is, although. I don't know. Daddy Warbucks and all of that, right?
Yeah. It's no longer a daily comic strip.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned the movie, because at the time the movie came out, the comic strip wasn't really published in many newspapers anymore. But with the success of the movie, people wanted to read it again. So it kind of led to this reemergence of Annie in the paper.
Well, as you were describing it, I just envisioned a lot of this history there. Yes, there was radio for some of it, not all of it. There certainly was a large portion of the Little Orphan Annie history that had absolutely no television. So you were talking about commuters reading the comic strip on the train. Because the initial strip was written towards an adult audience. I mean, I find that image in my mind is just like, that's, you know, it's not the Wall Street Journal, which is a lot of times you see, you know, the businessman on the train going over how his stocks are doing. No, they're sitting there and reading Little Orphan Annie. That's just wild. That's just absolutely wild. That's unreal.
Yeah, three or four panels at a time. And then you have to wait till the next day. And people went bonkers in 1925. There was actually a day when the Tribune left Little Orphan Annie, the comic strip, out of the newspaper. Uh-oh. And part of it was because they were, you know, she had met Daddy Warbucks and she was moving up in the world. And people thought she was getting a little uppity.
You don't say so.
They left it out of the paper, and the next day's Tribune, the front page of the Tribune, there's a big headline that says, Orphan Annie back again, two strips today, because so many people called in, so many people showed up to the Tribune, so many people wrote letters and were upset. There was even one person who submitted a bomb threat to Tribune Tower. Yeah,
Over Annie?
I know. I guess it was simpler times. There wasn't that much going on. I don't know.
I have a question, Corey.
Wait a minute. Yes, this is like the Cracker Barrel of the day.
I know.
let's not go there.
No, please. Wait. Seriously.
Seriously. No.
They take it Annie out of the newspaper for one day. People go berserk, and they put it back in.
I'm curious about one thing. Now they've had newspaper strikes here, correct? In Chicago.
Yes, absolutely.
In New York City, they had a newspaper strike. And one of the things that the mayor at the time, Fiorella LaGuardia, became famous for reading the comics. He read the newspaper over the radio, including the comic strips.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Did that ever happen here? I'm just
where they read the comic. Were they
well either that's read the newspaper or read just the comic strip section?
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. She said earlier that Annie was on WGN as a regular program.
Yes.
It wasn't. They didn't have to read it out of a newspaper. It was original programming here, which I would love to get my hands on some of that to see what that sounded like.
Something from tells me it probably doesn't exist anymore.
Well, that could be, but man.
Because remember, their recording techniques, I think, then would probably have been to an acetate?
Could be.
Oh.
Yeah. Because I don't think reel-to-reel machines existed yet.
Right.
Wow.
Well, to a disc of some kind?
We'll get back to this. Let me take a break and we'll be right back.
The little chatterbox, the one with pretty auburn locks. Whom do you see? It's little orphan Annie.
There you go. 720 WGN. Who needs, you've got YouTube. There's everything is on YouTube. That is the first half. Well, I'm not going to play all of it. That's first half of a little orphan Annie episode that ran in 1936. There was something in here. Oh, this is from an episode titled Watching Bridge Being Built. So there you go. And that's gotta be WGN, right? 1936?
I assume so. Ovaltine might not have been the sponsor anymore, but I assume that's WGN.
Remind people what Ovaltine was. Is Ovaltine still around?
I think it's still around.
Really?
Wasn't Ovaltine, it was advertised as being something healthy.
Yes.
I don't know if it had vitamins in it. It was like a breakfast drink, right? And would taste like chocolate.
That's basically what it was, I think. It was just like something you put in milk to make, or something to make chocolate. The alleged health benefits. I don't know about that. But at any rate, I remember Ovaltine, and I just think it's cool that there's so much about this little orphan Annie that's just wild. The comments on this page here where I found that YouTube video, one of them is the organist for these broadcasts out of Chicago was Irma Glenn. Very well known at the time. In 1931, my mom and her friend Clara, age 12, had the job of singing the opening and closing theme every week. How about that? Oh, and this also goes into something about the NBC Blue Network. So I don't know about WGN. If we were a part of the Blue Network or whatever, way back when, because, you know, we've been here 100 years, so... That's a lot of history. Yeah. Yeah, so on YouTube, by the way, if you're interested, there seems to be in my just quickly going there to see if I can find something to tie into what we were talking about. There seems to be quite a bit, or at least, of here we go. Hold on a second. Holy, wait a minute. Never mind. It was a WGN ad, but it's got nothing to do with Little Orphan Annie.
Oh, I tell you what, it was hard for me to find one in the Tribune. And as you said, WGN was owned by the Tribune. So I was kind of surprised I didn't find more little advertisements with Annie and WGN on them published in the Tribune.
By the way, GN was initially an affiliate of NBC until November 1st, 1931. Then they switched to CBS after NBC bought a competing station, WMAQ. And then in 1934, they were a founding member of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So... I found digging around.
Thank you. Well, you know, of course, we're talking about no television as part of this scenario at all. Anyway,
that's right.
It's a news.
didn't whether exist. Newspapers
or radios or whatever it was, there was no TV. And that's a big deal. If you have a story that's that popular in a newspaper, just imagine. Yeah.
Well, I find it interesting, too, how podcasts are such a big thing. And many podcasts don't have any video associated with them at all. So I just love the idea of a story being presented to where you need to come up with a picture of it in your head. And everybody's picture is going to be a little bit different. It's kind of the same with audiobooks, too. Or the listening to the radio. Like I love that concept of, okay, I have to actually think. I can't just sit here and be a passive, you know, audience here. I need to kind of think a little bit about it.
Yeah. Well, the phrase
yes. theater of the mind comes to
yeah.
mind.
Yeah, that's right.
Perfect.
Well, hey.
Hey, I didn't create it. Trust
Corey
me.
Corey Romore, if people want to get the Vintage Tribune, What do they got to do?
Oh, well, you got to subscribe. But the good thing is my newsletter is completely free. So you just have to go to chicagotribune.com and you could look for my name, Corey Romore. And I put the newsletter out twice a week. And in fact, I'm working on it. As soon as I get off the radio with you, I'm going to go back to working on it. It'll come out tomorrow afternoon. And
cool.
You can find my work on chicagotribune.com.
Can't wait. Thanks for being on. We'll do it again soon. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.